Donald on a Kitchen talks about food. Donald on a Kitchen talks recipes. Donald on a Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio.
The Donald on a Kitchen show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. More information can be found at www.themuckyduckpub.com or from Marcus at telephone number 232-8888.
Welcome to the Donna Lana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctico.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we have got a great show for you today. Oh, it is summer. It is kind of actually we got a bit of rain. This is good. Little weekend update. I'm up to my eyeballs in lambs, in newborn lambs at my place, and I am learning many new things.
Oh, it's lambs eat clover. So over the past 2.5 weeks, Lana had, her sheep had 10 baby lambs.
Yeah, but the sheep had 10.
You had to help. Yeah.
4 ewes and 10 lambs, and boy, oh boy, am I running. And 3 of those I'm bottle feeding because of various reasons. So this is interesting. I'm learning new things.
And she learned a lot of midwifery tricks. Oh, my goodness.
Besides lambs this time of year, irises and peonies. Donna, irises and peonies.
Oh, the whole old town is full of peony bushes. So everybody, all my neighbors, everybody's got peonies coming. And, you know, the first ones are open. And then we've got tons of, we got about a month of peonies. This is one of my, I am a bit of a peony thief. If I think they won't be noticed, I will pick some because they are so gorgeous. I try to pick around the bottom of the bush where I know they're going to fall down and get all muddy and ruined anyway. And then I keep them in, you know, I bring them to the dinner table always has peonies on it right now.
That's a good invention. Good invention are peonies. Irises.
They're so fleeting. I really don't even bother to pick them, but the rain has been a little hard on them. I've had to prop some of my irises up, but they're just gorgeous.
Yeah, and they do. They spread. I have got a couple of real old-fashioned, the golden varieties, and they're kind of got two-tone golden.
The golden
ones.
Purple ones? Those are really wonderful. Sweet.
And then a real heavy-duty purple one this year, just almost black. Well, that's a bit showy. But about 7-8 years ago, at the Madison, Wisconsin Farmers Market, I picked up a iris corm. They grow from corms, which are kind of like little.
It's a piece of the root, right?
Piece of the root. It's this little lump that kind of looks like a sweet potato, but it's called a corm. It's not a root. It's not a seed. It's not a bulb. And you plant those. Okay, that's fine. I planted it, and it takes a while. First year doesn't do much, but I am so proud of this one because it keeps coming back every year. It is showy purple. It is white in the middle with purple edges and extremely big. And I bought it because the name of the variety was Square Dance.
Oh, boy. Well, when you separate those, I want one.
So I am pretty pleased with irises. Irises and lambs. What could possibly be better this time of year? Good. Today, we're going to take romp through some recipes from Donna, and I want to talk a little bit about tomatoes a little bit, and we are going to bend your ear a little bit about why this radio station exists and why you can be part of it too. We're going to do a little bit to support KHOI today, and doing that is going to be our friend Susan Franson. Welcome, Susan Franson.
Well, thank you. It's wonderful to be here. I'm a great fan of Donald on the Kitchen, and so it's great to get to sit down at the table with you.
Great.
And do you have any good things on your table?
Oh,
we do.
Well, you know, when pre-COVID, and hopefully soon again, we'll be back in the studio. We used to bring in things to taste And of course, I have something to taste today, but Susan, I'm sorry, you'll have to imagine because you're not in the kitchen with us.
I will try to do my best. Okay. We're going to talk today. Susan will be back in a little while telling us about this fine radio station. But first, Donna has just got all kinds of good things to say about butter.
Butter. I am on a butter binge here, as it were. Part of it is, and I mentioned this last week, this cookbook that I found at the library called La Buvette, which is about a small wine bar restaurant in Paris. I've actually hauled off and bought my own copy because there's so many recipes in here that I wanted to keep. But one of the things that she talks about, La Buvette, is butters. They're called compounded butters in English, and she has a recipe for seaweed butter, and she talks about it in here. She says, Jean-Yves Baudier started making seaweed butter years ago, creating an amazing salty savory combination. Now, I have to say that this guy, Jean-Yves Baudier, is from Brittany, because in France, everybody loves the butter from Brittany, and it's salted, okay? So it happened that my mother-in-law lived in Brittany, and so maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I was there for 3 months, and in the town in Saint-Malo where my mother-in-law lived for many years, and I went to the store where she bought her butter always. And I think it was the store of this person, very, very big deal, where they've got the marble slab out and they are beating the butter with butter paddles,
oh, it sounds pretty kinky, Donna.
No, it's just delicious.
Oh, okay.
The old-fashioned way of making butter is, of course, you churn it for a while, but then you get a big lump of it out. And in this particular establishment, the lump is, maybe 15 pounds of butter or 20 pounds. It's a big chunk, right? And they have these big wooden paddles. Now, I have a smaller set. The paddle is it's a rectangle with handles, and the one side of the paddle, This is not television, so I can't show you. One side of the paddle has grooves on it. So what you're doing is you are smushing the butter and beating it around, because what it does, then it drives out more of the moisture, which is actually whey. So it makes the butter more dense, really. And so as they're beating it, they mix flavors into it. Not just seaweed, but other flavors. So I have been expanding upon that, because I remember I love the seaweed flavor, but also he had a yuzu flavored one, which just knocked my socks off. So yuzu is that, leave it to the French, it's a Japanese citrus. We've talked about it a lot. The only yuzu that you can buy in Ames is there is a yuzu jam that you can buy at the Asian market, whatever Asian. That one is, that's on Lincoln Way. They have something they call citron tea, which is actually yuzu marmalade. So, of course, I don't have any powdered yuzu to make the yuzu butter, but I came up with something else. I do have, and this was sent by my daughter who lives in New Zealand. I have a wonderful friend there who's a cook. So she sends me packages of freeze-dried passion fruit.
Now, doesn't that sound good?
In our tradition where I make things or Lana makes things and then we bring them into the studio and eat them, I realized that since we're doing this from home, often as soon as Lana arrives in the kitchen, I go, oh, Lana, you have to taste this. And then by the time we get on air, she's already done her exclaiming. So this time I made her wait. And Lana, here is some toast with yuzu butter. Now, mind you, there's no sweetener in it. It's just the fruit.
No, this is passion fruit or yuzu?
Oh, passion fruit butter.
Okay.
So taste it and tell me what you think. I'm sorry, Susan and Mike, there's none for you because we're too distant.
Ooh.
We got an ooh.
Ooh. Ooh. Ooh. This is. This is really nice.
That's how
nice.
I felt about it, too. Mm-hmm. It's really, really nice. So passion fruit is very tart,
mm-hmm.
and anything that you want to mix into the butter has to be extremely dry, nothing with any moisture in it. So this was freeze-dried passion fruit, and it had some chunks in it. So I put it in the mortar and pestle and ground it really, really, really fine. And then I had left a stick of butter out in a bowl until it was mushy, mushy soft. Then you put, and according to the recipes in La Pouvette, for the seaweed one, she put 2 tablespoons of seaweed. So I put 2 tablespoons of the passion fruit into it, and you just mix it really thoroughly, and then it's really soft and mushy. So I dumped it onto a parchment paper and kind of made it in a little roll, like you would cookie dough, you know, only maybe it's like an inch thick or something.
Or a giant caramel or something. Coffee.
Yeah. So I made it into a roll, and you stick it back in the fridge till it hardens back up into the normal butter thing. So you can do this with any flavor that you want, as long as the ingredient is very, very dry.
Yeah. You can actually see the little flecks of passion fruit in there. Little dustings.
So some ideas that I had, for example, tomato powder is something you can buy, or Lana often freeze dries her tomatoes.
So just dries them as if in dry.
Dehydrated.
Dehydrated. So just really, really dry.
I have a plan for some of those, Lana.
Okay.
So I'm going to crush them in a mortar and pestle or else in a spice grinder. Mm-hmm. But then they will still have probably seeds in them. Mm-hmm. So what you do after that for something like that, for example, if you were to buy, I know at Wheatsfield they have dehydrated raspberries, for example. You could use that. You would have to grind them up. But you want the seeds out. So then after it's ground, you probably want to put it through a very fine sieve, like you would with powdered sugar or something, and shake it through, you know, just tap, tap. And then the seeds will stay behind. And that would be true for tomatoes as well.
Ha!
So another thing, I was thinking sumac. You know, which is also very sour and that's really bright flavor.
Sour-ish thing.
Yes.
That's good.
Now, here's another one, Lana. You did this one.
That
would be lovely.
The dried
chives. Yes. Now, those, I would probably just put them in the mortar and pestle and grind them. Because like the seaweed, I did make a seaweed one using nori. I used nori. That does have a little bit of flake left into it. What you don't want is the seeds probably in the butter. Another one that I think I'm going to try is I have vanilla powder. Don't you think that would make a...
Oh, for goodness sakes.
Now, the interesting thing is, especially you can taste it with the passion fruit, and it would be the same with the vanilla. It's not sweet.
It
fools your tongue because you're thinking fruit or vanilla, but there's no sweet to it. So the sweet ones are really great on, I mean, the not sweetened fruit ones are really great on just toast, for example. The other ones you can, you know, if you're doing a savory one, like the chive butter might be good on a piece of grilled chicken. You know, once it's cooked, you just melt that little, doesn't take much. I mean, you know, like a teaspoon maybe even. Just take a thin slice off and put it on top of the cooked food, and if it's warm, it'll just kind of melt. Or even a classic one is to take a filet mignon, and like if you had a butter with porcini powder in it, any of your more flavorful mushroom powders, that would be another good one. Anyway, it's unlimited, and this is opposed to, like, we've done this before, our honey butter recipes, which are, you know, honey and butter and like cinnamon or something. This is not sweetened. So it has a lot of different culinary applications. Makes good gifts. If you have
there
to take a present, you know, to a dinner party for the hostess or something, a little roll of flavored butter for them to have later. Anyway, it's easy peasy. And I'm really enjoying it.
Oh, how nice. What passion fruit.
Passion fruit butter, and I've got some for you to take home because Joe will have to taste it.
Oh, well, that'll probably be a big hit. Big hit. Oh, butter.
Remember salted butter.
Oh, salted butter. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. There's your thought for the day on butter. And I want to continue this butter theme. I mean, after all, butter is one of those pleasures. It's one of those absolute wonderful. Why is that taste on our tongue?
Yeah, don't bother with the margarine, okay?
No, it's a different thing.
Butter.
Butter is a sweet thing. And we've read this before on the Donna Lana Kitchen, but I thought this would be a nice transition from butter to fundraising. Somehow it's all connected. Yeah, it is. It's all connected because we all like to butter up our audiences a little bit, don't we? So I'm just going to read here this poem that I've always really liked by A.A. Milne called The King's Breakfast, because we all need a little butter. The king asked the queen, and the queen asked the dairymaid, "Could we have some butter for the royal slice of bread?" The queen asked the dairymaid. The dairymaid said, "Certainly, I'll go and tell the cow before she goes to bed." The dairymaid, she curtsied and went and told the alderney, "Don't forget the butter for the royal slice of bread." The alderney said sleepily, "You better tell His Majesty that many people nowadays like marmalade instead." The dairymaid said, "Fancy," and went to Her Majesty. She curtsied to the queen, and she turned a little red. "Excuse me, Your Majesty, for taking of the liberty, but marmalade is tasty if it's very thickly spread." The queen said, "Oh," and went to tell His Majesty, "Talking of the butter for the royal slice of bread, many people think that marmalade is nicer. Would you like to try a little marmalade instead?" The king said, "Bother!" Then he said, "Oh, deary me!" The king sobbed, "Oh, deary me!" and went back to bed. "Nobody," he whimpered, "could call me a fussy man. I only want a little bit of butter for my bread." The queen said, "There, there," and went to the dairymaid. The dairymaid said, "There, there," and went to the shed. The cow said, "There, there, I really didn't mean it. Here's milk for his porringer and butter for his bread." The queen took the butter and brought it to His Majesty. The king said, "Butter, eh?" and bounced out of bed. "Nobody," he said as he kissed her tenderly. "Nobody," he said as he slid down the banisters. "Nobody, my darling, could call me a fussy man, but I do like a little bit of butter to my bread."
Amen to that.
We all do. We all like a little bit of butter to our bread. And to talk about buttering our bread a little bit here at the community radio station, here is Susan Franzen to tell you some nice things about this radio station.
Where else can you get A.A. Milne and seaweed butter? Except on Donna Lana Kitchen. Well, it's great to be here. I especially asked to be here because Donna Lana Kitchen is one of the most outstanding and original shows that we have on KHOI. And also the only one I know that's won 2 international awards. Could you, this was a couple of years ago, but what were those awards?
It was some kind of, it's do you remember the name of the
company?
It's some Canadian international organization that promotes local voices in on the radio platform, right? And you submit, excerpts from the show. And there was a theme. Wasn't there a theme?
It was food and soil and things like that.
Right.
One year was just food in general. Then there was the one on soil.
Right.
And this was through the UN. It's an outreach arm of the UN, empowering people to talk about their communities and talk about food and all that
stuff. And definitely promoting local foods.
Local food. And believe it or not, way back when, we sent in our show about Jell-O. Jell-O and Carrot, the Carrot King. We've interviewed Gary Guthrie, so it was, who would have thought? They seemed to like it, and so we got an award for that. The second year, I think they said...
Oh, it was the year of the soil.
Yeah,
the second year
of the soil. And we just happened to have a couple of people that we talked to about soil.
Of course, because that is a major concern. Certainly in Iowa, and hopefully everywhere where they grow food, you have to have soil.
Yeah. So in that program, we talked to Fred Kirschman here in Ames, and we talked to...
The guy that talked about the indigenous Mayan thing.
Yeah, a teacher and a lecturer and a really amazing shaman of all sorts of indigenous knowledge named Martin Prechtel. We interviewed him because he had a lot to say about indigenous food and taking care of the earth. And let's see. A local prairie here too.
That's right. We did. Yeah. So somehow they liked us and they gave us another award. So it was kind of fun to get a little global recognition.
And we've been.
But now our listeners can give you an award right now. Any listeners,
we'll take it.
Especially.
Thank you very much.
Yes, any listeners, especially who are not members yet, can become a member just by going to our website, khoifm.org, and finding the Become a Member donate button and pressing that. And they can start out with $5 a month. And that's a cup of coffee. That's that really helps KHOI. So no gifts too small, no gift too large. But and you're just your little sampling of the kind of foods that the ways you do butter. And of course, the various marvelous people guests that you had on for the international award. I mean, it's just amazing. I think probably there's no radio station on earth that has this kind of variety. And of course, you always introduce yourselves as Lana Farmer and Donna Chef. But this is not hyperbole. This is not a little exaggeration.
No. She is a farmer and I am a chef.
Right. I've seen your garden. I mean, your acre. Is that, do you have more than 1 acre now?
Well, we own more than 1 acre.
I meant.
We farm about that. Yeah. Plus the sheep now. So yes, we're all kinds of stuff out there. Yeah.
Right. And so you really know what the soil's about. And
especially they farm vegetables. You know, it's not like they're growing corn and soy out there. They're farming things that they've been at the farmer's market for years. They grow things. Lana grows things that we eat.
Heaven forbid.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And unlike most of the guests or hosts that we have on KHOI, you can actually see Lana like, are you still at the farmer's market?
No, I'm not. However, I go down there almost every Saturday, but I don't have a booth anymore. I'm trying to experience this wonderful thing called semi-retirement. And we are mentoring some other farmers, which are wonderful. So we like to check in with folks down there. And we are involved in the Farm to Folks CSA, which is a buying organization here for the Farm to Folk. But, we don't do the Saturday farmers market, and I don't mind sleeping in a little bit. Saturday is because I have my Saturdays back. We've been doing farmers market for over 20 years, and it's kind of nice to slow down a little bit.
Well, but come garlic harvest, which will be what, in another month, maybe?
Yeah.
All right, they do still grow a lot of garlic. So who's going to be selling your garlic at the farmers market?
This is really.
Oh,
I don't know. I think we're anyway.
We lost you, Susan.
Well, I think I better.
Zoom is not treating us very well.
No. Hello? Mike, can you?
No, I asked
that. There we go. Okay.
Oh, very good. Anyway, this may be a real good time, and Susan will come back later. We'll take a break. This is KHOI. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa.
Welcome back.
This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Today we are talking about this fine radio station, and we are talking about butter. Oh, how nice, butter. Donna, we had kind of a windfall. It actually rained here a little bit. Windfall from the rainfall. We found some slightly soggy, but absolutely bounteous oyster mushrooms.
And they were down in Lana's woods, down along Onion Creek, and they were, the hugest mushrooms I have ever seen, like 6 to 8 inches across, and the most gorgeous pastel yellow, not subtle, really yellow. You're walking along and everything's green and the trees are all over the place, and then you see this bright yellow thing, and we harvested them.
We did.
Why did we?
I believe
abundantly.
A friend said those are golden oyster mushrooms, the kind that kind of like a half circle plate kind of growing on the side of a. Oh, they're so good. Now they were out in the rain for a bit, so they were a little soggy.
Right, they were definitely the most moist mushrooms I have ever had, right?
What did you do with them? Speaking of butter, Go ahead.
All right, so an oyster mushroom has a pretty subtle flavor, so you don't want to lose it or cover it. You know, I did not even use garlic on them, okay? I made a pasta and brodo, which is basically you've got a good broth. I used a homemade chicken broth, and then I floated some wide egg noodles cooked into it, and I dropped a few vegetables. I think I even just used peas and onions, but something very light and simple. Then on top of it, I had the mushrooms. I chopped them up into not tiny pieces, you know, like some of the pieces were like an inch or two. So you get a big chunk of mushroom. And then I fried it in butter. I mean, I don't know, how many mushrooms did I have? It was a good frying pan full, and I used a full stick of butter.
Oh, for goodness.
Yeah.
One of the nice aspects of moist mushrooms is that they soak up butter.
They do soak up butter, and I kept cooking them and adding the butter till they got a little crisp to them. And then I just put them on top of the pasta and brodo, and oh my, it was delicious.
Good for you.
A rare treat.
Yum. So, The rain, I have yet to find a morel. I think this is just too dry a year for them. But we did have a lovely, lovely bit of oyster mushrooms.
Yum. So I have never had such abundance in mushrooms. It was really lovely.
Good. And you have something else to talk about.
Oh, another thing that I talk about, spring abundance. Okay, this is a long story that's happened over like a 3 to 5 year period. So my friend Gio and his wife Paula, and Gio is Georgian. He kept telling me about this traditional Georgian stew called chakapuli, made with lamb. And he's, you know, like all immigrants, trying to recreate some of the flavors from his homeland. So he kept saying it has tarragon in it. And I said, well, what kind of, he didn't know what kind of tarragon, but a lot of tarragon. So we assumed that perhaps it was Russian tarragon. He said they just grow lots and lots and lots of it. So on the radio, I mentioned that I was looking one spring for Russian tarragon. So Gail Hickenbottom, who lives in Des Moines, called me and said, I saw some Russian tarragon plants at such and such a place in Des Moines. I thank you, Gail. And I drove down there and I got the Russian tarragon. I bought maybe 5 or 6 plants because I knew, okay, we need a lot of it, right? And I took them to Gio, who's a very good gardener, and he grew them, and they're big and gorgeous and beautiful, but they are not the right tarragon.
Oh, for goodness sake.
It's not a good cooking tarragon. So it just didn't taste right, then I'm going, okay. Well, finally, we did determine that it was, in fact, French tarragon, the classic French tarragon.
Which is a little different. Yeah, I mean, even I can taste.
Nothing tastes like French tarragon except French tarragon. Now, it is also not a plant that dries well. Tarragon has this really delicate, very fleeting aroma that you just have to have it fresh. It just, the second you dehydrate it, it just loses everything. So now I knew we needed a lot. So the next year, I bought a lot of French tarragon plants, and Gio put them in his garden. And now tarragon is a little iffy to grow here in Iowa. Like, the plant I put in my garden did not overwinter. Dead, dead, dead. My neighbor, who is a better gardener than I am, hers did not overwinter. And Lana's did not overwinter.
I have luck with Russian tarragon. French tarragon is really wimpy.
And Russian tarragon is useless.
However,
Gio was able to get his tarragon to grow. And this spring, he has a beautiful patch of tarragon. So he was able to harvest enough tarragon. And I mean, it takes cups and cups of tarragon. So I said to him while he was making this, I said, Gio, if you buy tarragon at the market, if you can even find it here, you get like, you know, maybe 5 sprigs for $2.99 or something. I said, Gio, how much do you think you'd have to spend if you bought this tarragon? He said, oh, $35 or something. You know, it's ridiculous. So in this recipe, which is nothing but tarragon and the green parts of onions, walking onions, which he also has in his garden. And the third thing is sorrel. Now, in Georgia, some people use sorrel and some people use a sour plum because it adds the sour. But he harvested probably, by the time he chopped them, I would say 10 or 15 cups of herbs.
Oh, for goodness
sake. A lot. So here's how you cook it. You put a thick layer of herbs and onions in the bottom of the pan. Then you lay the pieces of lamb on top of that. And then you layer with another layer of herbs and onions. And I love cooking this way because the herbs are, in fact, the vegetable. And then he just let it stewed and it cooked down in maybe an hour and something like that. He probably added some water or something. But I love where the use of the herb is so plentiful. I mean, we forget, you know, when we're adding herbs in, these are vegetal matters and they do bring nutrition as well as flavor. So this, I had my first chakapuli last Saturday, and thank you very much, Paula and Gio, and thank you to everybody else who over 5 years allowed this to happen in Ames.
Oh, very good.
Tarragon. And we'll have lots of tarragon for the rest of the summer, and hopefully Gio's will keep growing year after year.
Oh,
He said all he did was put a heavy mulch on it during the winter.
Okay, we'll try it. He's got a garden in town. He's got a garden that is fenced, which is probably a good idea. Yeah.
And it was in a raised bed, which probably, I don't know, that probably doesn't help it. It would make it more susceptible to cold, right?
No, not if you mulch it well.
Oh, okay.
Anyway,
we accomplished something we'd been talking about for 5 years.
Bravo.
And it was delicious.
Chakapuli. Bravo.
Georgian cuisine.
Good. Well, Susan Franzen, we're going to talk more about this fine radio station. Susan just does not drop out of the sky here. Susan has been involved with this radio station since the beginning, and you are involved with, tell us what show you are on the air with.
Yes. My show has from the beginning been Local Talk Wednesday, and it's about our listening area outside of Ames. So I'm always very pleased to hear your talks about the soil and where you get your food, because this is what I'm interested in also. But of course, I'm more interested in the people and the festivals and the little businesses and so forth. But I have a question I've been thinking about as Donna has talked. And that is, you are a chef, a real chef. And obviously, aside from your mother-in-law in Brittany and wherever your daughter is, I don't know. You actually go out and chef places, don't you? You still arrange these?
Well, I didn't do much during the pandemic, that's for sure.
No.
All chefs had a hard time during the pandemic. The restaurant industry got stood on its ear, and there's still a lot of questions in the food press about how. Which restaurants would survive and how they're going to survive and what's happening. And the pandemic brought up a lot of food issues. Mostly when I cook some events for Practical Farmers of Iowa, which I'm really, really happy to do. I was going occasionally back to California to do an annual event for Organic Farming Research Foundation. I'm like Lana. I'm sort of semi-retired. I don't cook publicly. In fact, I was never a restaurant chef. I was actually a private chef. Restaurant work is it's different. It's really different now. So yeah.
And it's hard.
So I like cooking. I always used to say I cook food. I know the people that I cook for. I like to cook with a face in my mind for who's going to receive this food, rather than, when you're a line chef in a restaurant, you're just turning out plate after plate and you don't really know where it's going. And I think one of the problems with being a restaurant chef is you start to divorce yourself. You can't really divorce yourself from your audience because, of course, they're the paying client. But to not know them is a little bit harder. In fact, often in really good restaurants, the chef will go out and walk amongst the tables and talk to the clients, because when you're cooking, it's nice to cook for someone.
Very good. Which is kind of like, we like to do this show and we like to do it for Central Iowa. We like to do it for our listeners. I think that works out pretty well.
This is a time for your listeners to do something for you. And that is become, if they are members already, become a sustaining member at $25 a month or $20 a month. I think we've done the math on that. I think for $20 a month, can be a sustaining member. But obviously, there's no limits. But it's easier to be a member who has a regular donation than to give a large lump sum. And the way to do that, there's many ways. If you'd like to come down, even now, even in COVID, you can bring a check to the station and it even lets you in.
Well, we had a, We had a very nice testimonial this morning. I called Practical Farmers for Iowa, and Deborah Buchholder answered the phone, and she was telling me how much she appreciated the show and how she's sharing it with all of the people that she speaks to, that she found it particularly useful during COVID. And I think that's true for local talk as well. When we really, I mean, Lana and I strive always to do this, but especially during COVID, when everybody was really kind of housebound and everything that was happening locally was much, much more important. And I hope we retain some of this focus as we come out of COVID, because we have a lot to appreciate here in Central Iowa. And I think the radio station and local talk and as well as at Donna Lana Kitchen, we really try to bring you what is completely right at our doorsteps. Now, I know people in other parts of the country and some around the world because of the internet listen to the show because our community is kind of an example of a rural community in the, as we say, the belly of the beast. We are a thriving rural community, and farming issues are very important around us. So that is the importance of the voices on KHOI.
Good.
Yes, I think that's absolutely true. Great testimonial. I'm not surprised that people are listening to your show in many other places. And it is one of the amazing things that's happened to because of COVID is we could have someone in Paris listening to the show and joining in.
Well, I think, you know, the importance
we,
of
we eating, once on Local Talk had somebody in Geneva. It was
The importance of what's going on in Iowa is
and so well
is we give lots of information about food systems that do apply to everybody, most especially urban people. Really like to understand agricultural issues because, of course, they're still buying their food. Even if it's in an urban market, it's coming from somewhere, usually in the country. So anybody who eats needs to understand and is interested in agriculture.
Well, we're talking now to our listeners and how they can support this endeavor with wonderful shows like Donna Lana Kitchen and Local Talk, and it goes on and on. The music shows, big variety of music shows, including Mike's show on Thursday, and also, of course, I mean, we're 24/7, so there's
amazing, isn't it?
Lots going on all the time, and the other thing that is really what. But, which is now free from practically.
I think I'll break in here because this is a nice time to remind you that this is KHOI and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Go to www.khoifm.org and become a member or renew your membership. And thanks to all the volunteers and staff that make this happen.
Yes. Kitchen.
Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. Thanks, Susan, for all that information. Good. We'll have a little bit more of how to become a member at the end of this show. Ah, summer. Yes, summer is catching up to us. I have a little bit to say about tomatoes because...
And she is the tomato queen.
I love growing tomatoes. So I ran across... Actually, Donna sent me this article.
How many varieties did you plant this year, Lana?
About 30. So there you go.
There you go.
I mean, and not all of them are going to survive, but I'd like to give everybody a chance. Donna sent me a little news item here from the organization Moses. Now, Moses is a organization that is involved with organic farming, and it stands for Midwest Organic and Sustainable Education Services, Moses. Yes, and they're situated in Wisconsin.
Yeah, and they do have the largest annual organic farming conference in the country.
Yes, they do. Moses. But they have a few things to say about tomatoes because tomatoes always have been a big money crop for anybody that's growing tomatoes or growing vegetables. Tomato sales are way over $132 million in the United States because everybody loves the tomato. It's kind of this glut of good stuff. But now...
But not all those tomatoes are that good.
No, but people are growing them all over. And it's now not just summer things. People grow them in greenhouses. People grow them hydroponically. One problem is that it's really hard to get organic seed that does well in your area. Tomatoes are, I wouldn't say fussy, but they do better in certain regions. Tomatoes adapt really well to the local environment, and you just can't, you know, a tomato from Maine may do great there, and so here in Iowa. So in Wisconsin, they decided to work on breeding some commercially viable organic tomatoes.
Midwestern
tomatoes. And remember, now their results are Wisconsin results, and they're not Iowa results, but at least it's a little closer to home. We need varieties bred specifically for local climate conditions. And so
especially for tomatoes. They're very fussy.
Yes. So people glommed onto this at the University of Wisconsin, and using high tunnels and using greenhouses, they started crossing tomatoes back and forth, and they happened to get two crops a year by using greenhouses, because you could have to go through different generations. And then they tested for qualitative and quantitative. Qualitative, as in
how good does it taste?
Good. And quantitative, this is what the farmers worry about and concerned about. How many pounds of tomatoes can I get off of this plant, huh? So they came up with some combinations or some new varieties that they are talking about here. There's one called OCSA 404 crossed with Defiant. Defiant
is
that
a real catchy name, I gotta say. Yeah.
And that one is one of these purplish kind. It came from the line of Japanese Black Trifle and Prudence Purple. Then they have a red one called Crimson Sprinter crossed with Defiance, huh? They said that was a good one. And then there's one called, here, hold on to your hat here, OSA 404 times JBT. And this is a group that they're working on, the green striped tomatoes. So they're kind of working on those, and we are hoping that will continue.
So you might grow some of those next year?
Well, we'll see. I love growing tomatoes, and I have lots on my farm. Actually, I've been growing green zebra and Aunt Ruby's German green. I love green tomatoes. Another red tomato, just a plain red tomato, that you find that they do good. And so you plant them again. And actually, I have saved seeds and planted them again. St. Pierre, Abraham Lincoln, and Rose are, I don't know, they just do good on a New Creek farm. Now, see, they do good on a New Creek farm, not necessarily somebody else's, but there you are. And then I save seeds of fence row cherry, a cherry, and that one came from a Iowa breeder, and blonde caption, which means little blonde head. That's a little yellow cherry. And that came from, originally from Seed Savers Exchange. But there's lots of varieties out there.
Well, one thing I did hear from Seed Savers, I had a question. When I first moved here 15 years ago from California, Southern California, you know, I had been eating the local market tomatoes. So my taste buds knew really what they tasted like. And so I found in the farmers markets here that this was the beginning of everyone growing heirloom tomatoes, but they were all growing the same varieties, like Cherokee Purple or, you know, Green Zebra. And some of those varieties that I had tasted in California did not taste as flavorful here in the middle of Iowa. And so I went, oh, this is an issue. I talked to somebody at Seed Savers, which is in Decorah, so they really know Iowa, and they recommended planting Northern European varieties like German heirlooms or Russian heirlooms that would do better in this climate. Just a little rule of thumb when you're picking your varieties.
Yeah. And remember, there's hundreds and thousands to pick from. But yes, I've had luck with it depends on the weather. It depends on how much rain. It depends on when the woodchuck shows up. Oh, it's really a fun out there, I tell you. So good luck to all you tomato gardeners out there.
I have a question. Can you explain the difference between a determinate and an indeterminate tomato?
Think of it this way. Determinate tomatoes come determinately all at one time, generally all at one time. If you want to make sauce, you're going to get a bloom, fruit set, all kind of together, and they tend to be short vine. Determinate, short vine. Indeterminate, long vine, and they keep setting fruit actually well up until
all
the frost.
Season long. Okay.
Indeterminate, tall vine. So those are kind of there's a lot of things in between, but there you go. Again, how do you want to use your tomatoes? Ah, yes.
Or your garden space, I guess.
Or your garden space,
yes. The indeterminate ones require a lot of staking and vining.
Yes, they do. Yeah.
Okay.
But that's what they like to do. After all, tomatoes have their preference too, you know. Yes. Well, Susan Franzen, thanks for being with us today. Can you give us the contact information again for those nice listeners out there that want to join and be members?
KHOIFN.org. And that's when you get there, look around for the Become a Member Donate button. And if you want to use the phone and give us a call, 515-292-2878. And if you want to come by, we're at 410 Douglas. And you can stop in. Somebody
Great.
Probably open the door. Walk in the building.
Yes. This is community radio. And you, all you listeners, you're part of our community. Be a part of this thing. It's really good. We are mostly all volunteers. Thanks to all the volunteers and the staff, like our good engineer, Mike, who make this show happen, because we certainly couldn't do it without all the folks that know how to get this stuff out on the air. We have had a good time doing it. Donalana Kitchen has been around for a while, and we appreciate being on KHOI Community Radio. You've been listening to Donalana Kitchen, and we had music today by Sam Rosetta. Sam Rosetta plays the hammer dulcimer. We'll go out with a tune called Dulcimer Boogie. These are all, he writes original hammer dulcimer music, and this is one of them. Thanks to Susan Franzen for being with us today. Support this fine radio station. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We did excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.